Before we begin, please refer to the disclaimer and link in the podcast notes, and note that all opinions expressed in this podcast are intended for informational purposes only and should not be treated as investment or financial advice.
This week's crypto recap. A US presidential candidate voices support for crypto as Robinhood comes under fire from regulators for its crypto product. And is meme coin season returning? We cover all this right now in the Collective Shift weekly recap. Actionable insights and a breakdown into the crypto market, all in under 30 minutes. A lot to get through this week, Nick.
Yeah, it's been pumping as always. Yeah, I think the thing that struck me the most is maybe meme coin is back, not just in crypto markets, but in the wider. And as we all know, that I think the US presidential election is just going to set off a lot of fireworks for crypto. Now we've got the likes of Trump possibly speaking pro-crypto, which is probably the thing I'm most looking forward to getting into today. But maybe inflation is the key driving point in the overall macro market. Perhaps you can shed some light in what's happening in macro land and in the markets.
Yeah, so the past 7 days, you know, in crypto, we're relatively flat once again. Bitcoin around, you know, 62 to 63,000, ETH around the 3,000 mark or slightly under. Time recording, we've got BTC down 2%, ETH down 5% for the week. Solana down a bit worse than that. Really, I think you see this before sort of key macro events, or at least in this stage of the cycle. I know in years gone by, we've covered on content for members explaining that macro isn't having that much of an impact on the crypto market. But I feel like now we're into the swing of things where it is definitely having an impact. And, you know, with that said, we do have, I think, this Wednesday in the US, the new CPI data. So that's just one way to measure inflation. And the Federal Reserve relies on that heavily to guide their decision making to do with interest rates. So that's coming out on Wednesday. So, yeah, I think just a bit of selling, or just, you know, everyone's sort of sitting on the sidelines just in anticipation of that. We have the expected figure, or the annualized figure, to be 3.4% inflation. So that would still be quite above the Fed's long-term target of 2.0%. And we saw inflation, you might remember last month, actually surprisingly jump up from 3.1% to 3.5%. So really, the big thing I'm looking for is, look, if it's in line with 3.4%, I think the market will like that. That's just my hunch. If it falls below 3.4%, the market would like that even more. So this is all quite short-term stuff at the end of the day. But that's definitely the thing to be watching this week.
Perfect. Perhaps we can jump right into one of the biggest news items, which is Robinhood. They come out, which, if you're not familiar with Robinhood is one of the most popular stock trading platforms you can use to get access to US equities, for example. They have been rolling out support for different cryptocurrencies and crypto trading in the last few years. They come out and now are in the firing line from the SEC in the US, and they will come out to be served a Wells notice, which is just a notice to say, hey, we're looking into you and you most likely might be getting an infringement notice from the department. This was real shocking to me, Matt, considering Robinhood was one of the, you know, biggest sort of fintech companies, stock trading platform companies. I think the reason why it really took my attention was that it's not just regulated to these crypto, you know, DeFi platforms. They're coming after some of the biggest ones, that is Robinhood. Not sure if you were following this one, but, you know, it just to me, Robinhood are unable to exactly know what the rules are. Vlad, their CEO, come out and said that, hey, they've met multiple times, over 10 times, with the SEC to try and get some clarity over what cryptocurrencies they do offer on the platform. So that's just one of the things I took away from it, that, hey, biggest fintech and stock trading platform out there, they're not confident in knowing how to support and offer crypto services. Then it's kind of like, who else can, in a way? I'm not sure if you follow this one.
Yeah, definitely. I think if this was just another regular crypto exchange that the SEC was going after, like, we wouldn't really be talking about it, because given they're already flagged, they're going after Uniswap, the SEC is in a pending lawsuit with Coinbase, and they went after the likes of Bittrex, Kraken, even Binance US last year. But the fact, yeah, to your point, that it's Robinhood, a non-crypto native company, is a huge deal, especially when you talk about how popular of a service Robinhood is. And given even in the past, they sort of bent the knee a bit to the SEC, or took an extremely conservative stance of delisting XRP. And they also delisted, I think, Solana after there were, you know, allegations thrown out by the SEC, which none of the crypto companies really did, or if they did, there was maybe one or two of like a dozen that actually went and made that conservative approach like Robinhood did. So yeah, they're really putting all their shots out there, really, the SEC, and getting, I guess, the importance for all of us stepping back is it's just another indicator that things are coming to a head, really, in terms of there being some sort of, you know, answer to how the US will regulate crypto assets. Like, everything is very slow moving, going through the courts for now has been the only way anything's getting done. But ideally, we want to see some legislature, you know, drawn up in Congress or in Washington, which is ideal. But these court cases will likely have a big sway on how that legislation ends up looking.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we've got a good indication that Robinhood will enter the frame here to put pressure and file these lawsuits because he did say that the SEC is, quote, attacking crypto, and they vowed to take the fight to the SEC. So one to watch, and no doubt we've got another big player trying to get some clarity for the market.
Yeah, certainly going to be a big, you know, 6 to 12 months ahead over in the US. In terms of the ETF update, always important to keep, you know, checking in on the data, given so far this bull market, it's been highly, I guess, leading indicator of how prices are going to go. And the markets have sort of moved in line with ETF flows. So checking in on how we've been going. Bitcoin ETFs actually had their first week of net inflows for, I think, ending a streak, I think, of five weeks of net outflows. So that was you know, promising to see, at least stem the bleeding. And it was probably more importantly or encouragingly for me was we actually saw it come out that a large holder of these Bitcoin ETFs turned out to be, through different reporting seasons and whatnot, a Boston-based entity called Bracebridge Capital. And they reported owning roughly $360 million worth of various spot Bitcoin ETFs. What's important there is actually, you know, holding them for, you know, presumably for sort of like long-term holdings, similarly to how you would have gold on your balance sheet, or just diversifying, I suppose, your assets under management. Rather than some of the other news headlines that we'll get to a bit later in the podcast that were not really reflecting this sort of news event. So again, it's sort of going back to what we've been talking about all this time with, you know, more details coming out in 2024. You're just going to continue to find out about who is holding these Bitcoin ETFs and who is supporting them.
Maybe also flagging the Ethereum ETF front. This is coming up very quickly. I think it's May 26 is the date that the SEC has to either deny or decline one of the ETFs, but that's been really gaining a lot of traction, Matt.
Yeah, yeah. There's May 23 and May 24. You've got VanEck on their application due for a final decision on the 23rd. And then the following day is another one, which is actually the ARK Invest and 21 Shares, their joint ETF application. So yeah, finally going to see some answers. As we've been saying, the hopes of a approval are pretty slim these days. The sentiment has been falling basically year to date, gradually. So, you know, some updates probably from the last time we spoke was Grayscale withdrawing their application altogether. And then ARK Invest and 21 Shares, so their joint application, they actually submitted, a revised version of that, and that new revised version did not have the text or information related to staking being involved in the ETF, which again, people can interpret that in a bullish way because, oh, hey, maybe they're in conversations with the SEC and then they're responding to the SEC's feedback. Or you could argue it's bearish because you could say ARK Invest and 21 Shares have decided, hey, we know a denial is coming up. Let's omit this staking thing. Just so the SEC, putting more pressure on the SEC to actually come up with a, you know, unique answer to why they're denying these applications. So the only people who know probably why the motivations for doing this are probably, you know, the executives at ARK Invest and 21 Shares. So the market's left to speculate. But I think really to summarize it, it's still looking like a very slim chance that these ETFs get approved by May 23. But yeah, worth watching for sure.
Perfect. Yeah, if you're a betting man, Polymarket have some juicy odds because basically the entire market is saying we're gonna get a denial here.
Yeah. That's it. Over, sticking with the US, and we do have a big update that went through some of the house over there in the US last week.
Yeah, so there's a controversial rule that's called SAB 121. Now, this sounds like it's kind of a mundane rule that doesn't really impact much, but it's probably one of the most important discussions that's going on in crypto, because it's a rule that essentially makes it near impossible for US banks to properly custody cryptocurrencies. They just set the threshold really high. They have these really mundane reporting requirements that mean that it's not really economically viable for banks to hold crypto assets at the moment in the US. So this is, although a positive move that the House moved to vote and kind of overturn this policy, President Biden does have veto power over this decision, and the department come out and said that they were looking to veto it if it does pass the Senate. So although it's a small win, you probably expect now it possibly to be vetoed, but this is just a huge narrative to watch, because as I've talked about in the past for members, we've seen possible banks dive their toes into custody maybe. It's just such a big deal for people who do not want to trust crypto exchanges. They do not want to hold crypto, you know, in their own custody. Being able to go to your bank and have your bank custody this with your financial institutions that you trust and that you bank with is huge unlock for the industry. So this is one that hopefully, if it does get overturned in the next year or so, will really probably revolutionize the way that people custody their crypto assets.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very dry piece of news, but the ramifications from this could be extreme, like even for so many reasons, but even just from an investment point of view, like the bull case for something like Bitcoin or ETH, or particularly Bitcoin, is enormous if the barriers for banks getting involved in this space are eliminated or make it easier. So that's why all of this stuff matters, even though we won't see any actual answer or result for quite a while. But sticking with the US here, our last one, we do have some really major news in terms of the election coming up in November. So far, people have only spoken about, okay, what's the impact of the US election this year on crypto? So far, it's really just been, risk assets tend to do pretty well in election years. Therefore, crypto is going to do really well. That sort of has been the extent of like people's, how much they care about the election. But we finally saw a bit of more of a focus on crypto last week with, presidential candidate Donald Trump sort of posturing that he's a pro crypto or a supporter of the crypto industry and keeping, I suppose, the industry jobs in the US. So that was a first in terms of his whole campaign not ever really speaking about crypto. And it's something to watch.
He was and the thing is that he was traditionally really anti-crypto. So there was a few tweets of him back in 2019, and he was saying that, crypto's garbage, same posturing of juice for illicit activities. He doesn't support it. So this is probably the first conclusive move away from those previous statements, and really sets the scene, because the US Democrats have been very anti-cryptocurrency, whereas probably the Republican side has been more favorable. So this could be a potential election issue. Everyone's wondering how much it really matters, but it is a sign that potentially if a more favorable government gets in, what effect does that have on cryptocurrency? Will more progressive laws be passed? Because at the moment, Gary Gensler, very hostile to cryptocurrencies. So any new government that might be favorable to cryptocurrency could replace some of these older people in charge and maybe get some more proactive crypto laws, which no doubt would have positive impacts on the industry.
Yeah, definitely. So watch that space. And finally, we do have here a return of, goes back to our times during lockdown in COVID with GameStop and AMC, Bed Bath & Beyond, all those meme stocks sort of coming back into the headlines all as a result of this return of sort of one of the drivers of that meme stock movement. The pseudonym, at least, is Roaring Kitty. They sort of returned and posted on X or Twitter for the first time in a very long time, and it sort of sparked some very strong rallies in meme stocks, and then also that translated to strong price action for meme coins. So yeah, it's why does this matter? Like, why is this important?
Essentially, it signals, I guess, the market sentiment towards maybe more risky items in the crypto sphere, but also shows that, hey, this rally in meme coins in the crypto space is not necessarily totally detached from the experience in the wider market, which can really be symbolized by things like GameStop, Bed Bath, that have these manic crypto rallies. And for me, it also brings us back to the point that cryptocurrency was always seen as more volatile than traditional markets. But if we actually look, I saw a cool stat that said that Bitcoin is actually less volatile than Tesla year over year.
There you go.
So it's showing us that, hey, the traditional markets aren't so far detached from cryptocurrency, and kind of looks at this idea that, hey, will things like Bitcoin become less volatile over time? Really sets a scene. And I know some major cryptocurrencies such as Pepe move to new all-time highs. These things are always important to look at. And one of the key sentiment metrics we look for when the market starts to get overly euphoric and frothy and piling millions and millions, like we saw into Solana meme coins, I think at pretty much the height of the Bitcoin all-time high in March, where they topped up. You know, we had developers raising $20 million to build meme coins for some reason, and they turned out to be essentially rugs and haven't really delivered anything meaningful. So these are just really good points and data points to look for when we're looking at market sentiment.
Yeah, for sure. So we'll see what Roaring Kitty does. There's been no indication yet. They've done their one post, but yeah, we'll see if they have bigger plans. So hey, worth watching. But in terms of the altcoins, there's always things going on in terms of developments or new announcements from these altcoins. We'll recap, some of them in our weekly podcasts every week. The ones we want to highlight this week are Infinex. So that's one that's, sort of stemming from the Synthetics team. So one of the oldest and I guess most widely used DeFi projects out there. They are getting very close to launching. So last week they started a 30-day campaign for people to set up their accounts on the app and deposit USDC. So what it is, at least from the outset, and why I guess it's what I guess their unique value proposition is it's going to be, a perpetuals futures exchange, similar, I suppose there's many competitors out there like DYDX and whatnot in the market. However, what distinguishes Infinex is going to be their push for user experience. So leveraging a lot of the, I suppose, advancements in account abstraction, cross-chain communication, innovations that sort of Wormhole pushed and others. And Infinex is really just trying to aggregate all of those, innovations around the industry from the past few years and, I suppose, combine them and deliver a really, cutting edge user experience in, I guess, relatively to where crypto has been. So I'm excited to see just how seamless it is to use Infinex. And I will be depositing some USDC over there to, I suppose, what's the point of this campaign is to really, if you deposit USDC, you will accrue points. And the more points you get, I suppose the quicker it will be for you to start using the app, because I think their wait list is more than 200,000 accounts. So yeah, that's just a notable update there.
Perfect. And maybe staying on the Ethereum ecosystem, I saw that the Ethereum daily burn rate hit a yearly low. So as we know, a major impact of the merge was this idea of, introducing, combining the Ethereum burn mechanism with potential more issuance, being left out of the market. As activity increases and more stake happens, essentially the Ethereum total supply will start to decrease. This is, I think, decreased on an average of about 0.2% or 0.02% net for the year. So it's still net deflationary as a whole. It's just hit, since the merge, but it's hit a sort of a yearly high, indicating that I wonder if all this activity happening on L2s has really alleviated a lot of this gas burden on Ethereum's main layer.
For sure. That was always the sticking point for Ethereum. And I think it's a big reason people point to for its weakness or just its sluggish price action so far this bull market, even though it's up more than 150% off of its lows. people saying, well, are you going to call ETH money? Or are you going to call ETH, really value accruing and therefore, pricing out people? Because we saw the effect of the scaling, the L2 scaling really took pressure off of gas fees. And, the cost to use the Ethereum mainnet has come down drastically, which has been the plan. However, now you're not burning as much ETH, and people, I suppose, who were really advocating for the burn being a big part of the thesis for ETH are sort of a bit disappointed. But I think we'd always really emphasized just the need for Ethereum to grow its ecosystem, and I think everything will take care of itself more so than focusing on the burn. So worth watching for sure, and seeing L2 adoption really, really continue, which we'll get to soon. But in terms of Eigenlayer, they also had big news last week with their token generation event. So the Eigen token can now be claimed, and you won't be able to transfer it for quite a while. I think it's till September. But the claim window is now open for Eigenlayer.
Maybe shifting gears now to the Bitcoin ecosystem. One of the biggest development companies that are building infrastructure on Bitcoin to sort of scale in a similar way of Ethereum, Botanic Labs, they raised, I think, $8.5 million to build out this different chain that's leveraging Bitcoin. So I think, as I mentioned, for members, definitely be on the lookout for a lot of these Bitcoin-focused and building on Bitcoin narratives, which is only starting to ramp up, and we're seeing more and more of these core teams funded.
Yeah, for sure. That member post was really opened my eyes to the dozens of projects that are going live this year in the Bitcoin ecosystem. Sticking on the L2s for Ethereum, and there were some big updates from some main players. Optimism was one of them.
Yeah, so they announced support for these L3 chains. Now, all the terminology can get really mundane and out there. Essentially, it's just people building another layer on top of Optimism to provide more control over their applications.
Mm.
And they sort of said that, hey, here's a framework for sharing different revenues, different technologies with Optimism DAO. So that's a really core potential mechanism for Optimism, the OP token, if more and more of these chains that are built around it can start to distribute parts of their revenue back to Optimism and the treasury, which was always a big question mark about any value accrual.
Mm-hmm.
Also saw that Polygon, their special kind of privacy-focused platform, which is called Maiden, entered testnet this week. So that huge focus, and really wondering whether privacy is going to get some of this attention. We saw other platforms like Railgun had a really big rally higher off the focus of privacy. Now this is one that Polygon, not a lot of people are talking about, but they're incubating a lot of different networks, and this is one of them that is entered testnet.
Yeah, nice. Keen to check that out. In terms of things to look forward to, worth just noting here that the FTX administration, they proposed a recovery plan. So for any FTX users, make sure, this may be for FTX Australia, may not be relevant, but for FTX Global, the separate lawsuit, they're looking like the users may be getting back more than a one-for-one, I suppose, return on their deposits. As we know, the collapse of FTX basically happened at the bottom of the market. And we know that the cryptocurrency holdings have multiplied, a lot of them, in value. So users now getting back more than a one-for-one dollar return, roughly 118% of their deposits, which is at least better than one-for-one.
Yeah, something, but obviously not to be mistaken that they are going to get the exact amount of cryptocurrency. Yes. It's all dollar value related, which I think is in line with, I guess, how traditional bankruptcy works, unfortunately, for FTX participants.
Yeah, for sure. In terms of rapid fire, we might do a bit of underappreciated or overappreciated. I think I might break my streak of doing underappreciated, it seems, every week. And I've gone overappreciated this week. And it was with respect to the Bitcoin ETF headlines. I think, with prices sort of trading flat for quite a while, I think people are getting a bit more desperate for some, really price sensitive, exciting news. And I saw a lot of big Bitcoin accounts sort of sharing that, the likes of JP Morgan and Susquehanna, really massive banks in the US were investing in Bitcoin ETFs because it was, listed as a holding on their balance sheet. But then we did have some corrections coming out from, you know, the ETF analysts over at Bloomberg who did, you know, make a point to say, like, don't get too excited because these assets are really just part of their market making programs. And what are known as APs, which are authorized participants that are really, I suppose, allowed to trade the ETFs, you know, and have special privileges. So they often will have long positions and then they will also have short positions on the ETFs, but they don't have to report the short positions from what I've read. So it sort of just counteracts it. And it's really a nothing burger at the end of the day. The Bitcoin ETF news we spoke about earlier with that Boston-based entity is like much more exciting. But when you see things like JP Morgan buying Bitcoin ETFs, just always just have a bit of a skeptical view of it, which turned out to be true this week. What have you got for us, Nick?
I've got, and shifting gears a bit, underrated, a bit of a book recommendation here. So I've recently been reading Lynn Alden's book called Broken Money. That was probably one of my favorite books I've been reading for quite a while.
Nice.
And it's inherently related to cryptocurrency. It's all about our current money system and then postures, how we can change it with advances of technology and, for example, Bitcoin and all these different types of open ledgers and shared monies. So that was one I really encourage listeners and people who love a good read to check out. There is actually a condensed 30-minute version that I was seeing shared on Twitter by Lynn herself that kind of simplifies the book into like a 30-minute snapshot. So maybe we'll attach that one to the show notes because definitely worth a read, especially if you are very interested in, you know, money, how did it get here, and then where do we go with the likes of Bitcoin and new forms of money that are hopefully entering the system.
Yeah, nice. We'll definitely link to that 30-minute summary from Lynn. It's a good recommendation there for anyone interested. But that is a wrap for this week. If you are looking for more insights, see our revamped Weekly Shift newsletter, providing free weekly market insights every Friday. Subscribe at collectiveshift.io/newsletter. That's collectiveshift.io/newsletter.